Welcome back, everyone. This is We Watch Movies. My name is Forrest. I'll be your host for today's episode. And joining me today, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Elijah. Elijah, how are you doing today?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad. We went to space last night.
We did. It's kind of
hard to breathe.
It was. But we were able to make it back in time because of that extra hour.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about a space movie today, if that wasn't obvious.
If it wasn't obvious by the title, we are going to be watching the 2009 Duncan Jones directed, Sam Rockwell starring sci-fi film Moon.
Wait, who designed the costumes?
I bet you know.
I don't. I remember
can't
seeing,
set me up like that.
I remember seeing the name in the credits and being like, oh, she did a good job. And then I forgot her name. But yes, Moon.
Moon. So, should we just get right into it?
Let's get right into it.
Okay, no witty banner today. Sorry, guys. All right.
This is a serious podcast.
Yes, very serious. Serious things, talking about serious stuff. All right. Before we get into it, spoiler alert for Moon.
Yep.
And if you want to follow us and see what we're doing, go follow our Instagram page at We Watch Movies Podcast.
Again, it is accurate about 70% of the time.
That's a modest assessment. I was gonna say 65, but
you know, okay.
It's accurate most of the time.
Yeah. Might pull an old switcheroo on you last minute. Who knows? It's part of the excitement.
We just like to keep it lively. We just like to keep it spontaneous, like a good relationship. You never know what's gonna happen.
Hopefully just good stuff though.
All right. So Moon. In the year 2035, Lunar Industries has built a facility on the dark side of the moon to farm helium-3, the Earth's main power source. The facility's lone technician, Sam, is in the final 2 weeks of his 3-year contract when unusual things start to occur, and he realizes he might not be the only one on the moon.
Yes, and I'm going to get this out of the way. This movie is basically Space Oblivion.
Space Oblivion,
Did you see Oblivion?
Yeah, I did. That's a good point.
Yeah, to be fair, Moon came out first, so Oblivion is actually Earth Moon. But
that's right. What'd you think of Oblivion before we get into Moon?
It was all right. I liked parts and disliked other parts. It's like a solid 2.5-star movie for me.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way there. I wasn't blown out of the water with it. It wasn't just shockingly great.
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow is way better if you want a good Tom Cruise sci-fi movie. You're objectively incorrect about Edge of Tomorrow. That movie is fantastic.
You know, it's interesting that we have this differing opinion on Edge of Tomorrow because I watched it and I was like, well, that's not a good film. And the fact that every time we discuss it, you're like, oh, that's a brilliant film. I'm really surprised. I thought most people would have agreed with me, but maybe I'm in the minority. It's fine.
I'm pretty confident you're in the minority.
I'd probably give the edge to Edge of Tomorrow. No pun intended. That wasn't even a pun.
That was just saying a word twice in a row.
Yeah, I'd give a slight edge to Edge of Tomorrow in terms of which is better, Oblivion or...
Okay, I'll take that. For me, Edge of Tomorrow is a 4-star movie for me.
Wow.
It's a great movie.
I might have liked Oblivion a little better than Moon. We'll see. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's talk about Moon. I have a lot to talk about.
Good. So before we start, you know, going, you know, scene by scene, what were some of your thoughts? Things that stood out to you, your overall general thoughts?
This movie was confusing and not like there was so much I liked and so much that felt so off to me. the set design, the score, a lot of the visuals, the performances, well, the performance,
right,
were really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But there were just parts, there were scenes and a lot in kind of the middle that felt so odd and off, and just I didn't love it. It was a lot of good things that didn't kind of come together and stick the landing for me.
Yeah.
Which was a little disappointing, I'll be honest. I was very excited about Moon.
Yeah, this is a film, and if you had listened to the podcast in the last few weeks, we talked about it on that space, that sci-fi space episode, and we were both pretty eager to watch it. And I think we both arrived at the same conclusion. There were a lot of good elements, but ultimately it didn't... it just wasn't all there for me.
I agree completely. I 100% agree. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and there are certain points in the film where you think the character should be reacting to
yes.
a certain situation in a certain yes. way. It's very
my gosh.
And I was like, how why are you reacting this way?
I know. I think,
yeah.
Also, like, there is... And we'll get into it, obviously. We're going to spoil the crap out of it. But there is a huge red herring in this movie that was just distracting after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But there were really a lot of good stuff and a lot of really good scenes. So let's get into it.
Yeah. Oh, and I will say, I thought it was interesting. And this is kind of something I will say I kind of guessed. I shouldn't have watched the trailer. Guys, if you're going to watch Moon, don't watch the trailer. You can easily guess the twist.
If you're going to watch Moon, don't listen to this podcast.
Also, if you're going to... Yeah, that's a good point. Within the first 5 minutes of the film, I watched like a minute and a half of the trailer, then decided I didn't want to watch any more of it. But after the first 5 minutes of the movie, I kind of guessed the ending, which is a little unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. I had no such... trailer experience, but
I'm glad yeah. But I will say it's interesting. There are two stereotypes I noticed. One they went full bore into, and the other they defied, which I thought was kind of interesting, and we'll get into those.
Yeah, we will. So the movie opens on, well, we get a commercial for Lunar Industries, which basically just explains what Forrest explained about how we get energy, basically mm-hmm. a limitless source of clean energy for Earth from the dark side of the moon. And Lunar Industries has a plant on the moon, and there's like these big moon combine harvesters
mm-hmm.
Harvesting the stuff, and they have a one-man operated base up there, and that operator is Sam Bell. He is assisted by an AI named Gertie, and he has a little emoji screen to express his emotions, which I thought was hilarious.
Can I point out the emoji screen? I couldn't get over that the whole film. It just felt so out of place. So
it did, but I thought it was funny. It cracked me up. Yeah, it was definitely weird, though. One of the mm-hmm. weirder interpretations of like an all-knowing AI type thing. But we have Sam and Gertie in this space base. He's been there for almost 3 years. It's a 3-year contract. He gets to go home in 2 weeks. We see him get a call or a message from his wife. They don't have live feed, so he can't live talk to people on Earth because the communications satellite is like down or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just send video messages to each other. He sends a video message back to her, and we see him watch one of his wife, and he clearly cares a lot about his wife. That's a very strongly established point early on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that immediately stuck out to me is kind of like this logic fallacy that makes sense as you get to the end of the film is, I thought it was unusual that they would just send one man to man the station for just three years by himself. It seemed unnecessary that you would have one man do that job. Certainly with what, you know, I'm sure there are studies and everything we understand about human deprivation from other humans and how that is not good mentally. It's not healthy. So that seemed odd to me that he would be there alone, but it makes sense in context of what we get into later on.
It does, yeah. In addition to him sending messages, we kind of get to see Sam's just routine for a while. We see him go to the harvesters and collect the helium-3. We see him use his free time to whittle a little model of his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
We see him eat some beans without hot sauce.
Yep. Beans for breakfast. I don't know if I'd want to go to the moon for 3 years.
Yeah, that hurt my soul a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
You would think if you're going to the moon for 3 years, you're going to at least get some good food, but no.
Yeah, not good food, but yeah. And it's a good setup. I liked the opening of this movie. It was interesting to see how he lived on the moon here. It was interesting to see the effects that the 3 years had had on him. He was talking to himself. He clearly missed his wife and daughter. He has a very young daughter.
Right.
Yeah. It was a strong opening.
He's named all the plants. There's friends. He's talking with Gertie, the AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what was the plant's name? I think the plant's name was Doug.
Yeah, something like that.
It's a great plant name.
So I think overall it was a very, it was a good setup. It was a very good setup.
Agreed. My favorite part of the movie was the first 30, 40 minutes.
Okay, yeah. And then I believe the big event that kicks off the rest of the film is there is an issue. Well, actually, it's
the chair.
The chair. Yeah, the chair.
I need to talk about the chair with you.
Yeah.
So Sam is just like filling up his mug with some hot water. I think he's making tea or something.
Mm-hmm.
He looks over at this armchair he has in the room, and there's a girl sitting in it, right?
Right.
There's this girl sitting in it, and he lays like just staring at her for a while. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. This is like horror movie vibes. And then we get the classic, he burns his hand on the water because he's not paying attention, and he looks back and the girl's gone. And I'm like, oh, dang, that's pretty intense. I like this. I'm intrigued. And then she never comes back except for half a second later in the movie.
Yeah, can I point out one thing that I've...
Yeah, point it out.
I was a bit bothered.
Yeah.
Because they definitely used horror elements, certainly with the girl. And then there's the one shot of him when he's asleep and he's dreaming of him and his wife in bed together. And then under the sheets, you see another version of Sam in, dirtied in an astronaut suit, reaching for it. So there was a lot of reaching for himself in the bed.
Yes. Yeah.
And then again, you see the girl later very briefly. There were these horror elements used that could have been set up for a really fascinating psychological thriller.
Yes. Yes. I loved that. I was so on board with it.
And they didn't capitalize on it.
It's never explained.
No.
Not even mentioned.
No. I think there's an off-screen explanation, but I'll tell you in a bit. I think it's a bit of a cop-out, but it's fine.
Okay, please do, because I want to know, because that was what hooked me, honestly.
Yeah.
Then nothing happened with it.
It's a good hook. So as Elijah said, saw the girl, he burned his hand, Gertie patches his hand up, gives him some gauze or a bandage on his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the combines has an issue and he has to go out to fix the combine.
Which he has this cool lunar truck for.
Yeah. Well, he's driving out to the combine and I think there's some dust. It might be a dust storm or something. And he gets distracted because he sees the girl again off in the distance very briefly. And she looks very ghoulish almost.
Yeah.
Very. And it distracts him and he's not paying attention and he ends up crashing into the combine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's injured. You know, there's like emergency light flashing, and it kind of fades to black as he loses consciousness.
Yes.
The next scene we get is Sam laying cleaned up. He's, you know, clean out of his suit.
Yep.
Yeah, laying in a med bay.
I think it's the infirmary in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So laying in the infirmary, and Gertie's there and tells him there's been an accident. He asks how long he's been out. He says, not long, get some rest, blah, blah, blah. He goes back to sleep. One thing immediately sticks out to me,
mm-hmm.
which was a logic question, is how did Gertie get him back on the ship?
Exactly.
On the station.
Yep.
And I think any keen-eyed viewer would have picked up on that. It was kind of a glaring question that gets explained here briefly.
Yep.
But then there are other things that don't quite stand out.
Like there's a cut on his right eye after the accident, and there's nothing there now.
Right. Right. So, yeah, exactly. Before he passed out, when he got in the crash, he had cut himself, and he's cleaned up. And then if you look, there's no longer a bandage on his right hand, just small things like that. If you're not paying mm-hmm. attention, you won't notice. But there are those small errors that just don't make any sense.
Yes.
So then we get, what is it, probably like 10 minutes of him interacting around the ship. Things aren't quite as they seem. He rounds a corner to hear Gertie seemingly having a live conversation with someone on Earth, or somebody's right. on Earth. And that, go ahead.
Which, just as a reminder, shouldn't be possible because the live communication array is supposed to be down.
Right, and there's a comment about that earlier in the film,
yeah.
when Sam asks Gertie if Lunar Industries is making that a priority, and Gertie says no, and he says, "Well, I'm leaving in 2 weeks, but I'd hate to be the next guy to come up, so they should get on that."
Yeah,
you know, further playing into this guy, he's you know, he's a pretty decent guy, seemingly.
Seemingly,
yeah, and so. So like we said, Sam walks in. He seems to be having a live conversation. It gets cut off when he walks into the room, and Gertie explains it away, saying that he was just recording a transmission to send back to Earth. Coupled with this, there's another strange occurrence, which is that the outside hatch is locked. He can't go outside, which is really concerning to him when he sees that there's an issue with one of the combines.
Combine number one, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think leads into our third fallacy, or third logic gap, is combine number one, I think, is the one that Sam was just going out to fix, and now he doesn't know why it's not running.
Yeah. And he did say he didn't remember much or anything, but like it's suspicious. You're suspicious at this point.
Yeah, very much so.
And then he talks to Gertie, and basically he sabotages something and is like, oh, I should go fix this outside. And he basically talks Gertie into letting him go outside.
Right.
And then we get my personal favorite scene in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in his moon truck. There's two moon trucks. The first one is missing. The second one he gets in, he goes out to combine number one, and he sees the wrecked moon truck that he had supposedly just crashed.
Oh, and that was the other visual thing that stood out, is when he goes out to get his suit, the one he normally gets on the left side is missing.
You're right.
And that seems to be a surprise to him, which shouldn't be a surprise to us.
Correct.
And shouldn't be to him either.
Yeah, and he gets the crashed moon buggy. And my favorite scene here, it's very well shot and it's very creepy too, a little bit. And he kind of undoes the hatch, and we see him look inside. And as we see him descend inside, we also see the body of the astronaut suit, like a body wearing the astronaut suit, leaning against the side, unmoving.
Yep.
And it's really, really well shot and effective, and it was very cool. And Jackie and I were watching it, and we were like, oh dang,
incredibly eerie.
And we see him like kind of geeked out, and We see Sam slowly wipe away the dust on the face mask. Mm-hmm. And it's him.
Yeah.
It's Sam.
Yeah. Which is kind of a mind bender, which you would think is the most important, like, shocking twist of the film.
Yeah.
And they put it in their trailer.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's disappointing as heck.
There are so many ways that you could have shot the trailer to, you know, get this general gist of there's someone else on the moon without revealing that the someone else is Sam.
Yeah.
So that was disappointing. So it goes, but yeah.
From henceforth, we shall call Sam, injured Sam with the hand bandage from the first part of the movie, Sam 1, and new Sam, uninjured, Sam 2.
All right. So Sam 1 and Sam 2. Got it. Yeah.
So Sam 2 finds Sam 1, and
right. We
get a jump cut. He carried him back somehow. We won't talk about how he managed to drag that guy into his own truck and et cetera, et cetera.
Low gravity.
There we go. But yeah, and then we get another great scene where Sam 1 wakes up in the infirmary and he's very woozy because he was clearly hurt very badly and left there for a while. And Sam 2 is standing there in aviators as Gertie just goes through his normal procedures with Sam 1.
Right.
It was very, again, very eerie, a little creepy, like, and mm-hmm. as the viewer, you're like, you don't really know what's happening
mm-hmm.
yet. And that tension of not knowing adds a lot of atmosphere, at least it did for me. So right. I'm like, okay, Sam 1 is clearly our Sam. So who the heck is this guy?
Right. And so when Sam 1 sees Sam 2 standing there with the aviators, I like the comment he makes to Gertie when he asks him, is there someone else in the room with us? And Gertie just tells him to get some sleep. I think this is perfect in real world. This is a scenario. This is kind of how it would go because he thought he had been seeing things and now he sees himself allegedly. And it great, great scene.
And like you said, fantastic setup for a really good psychological thriller.
Right.
Which we don't get.
Right.
Yeah.
And after the scene, it takes a while. You kind of come to an understanding, but there's a good probably at least 10 minutes where I was just dumbfounded as to why Sam 1 was reacting. Well, actually, both Sams were reacting to the presence of one another.
Yeah, they didn't have a reaction.
Right.
What would you do, Forrest, if you walked, if you woke up and standing next to your bed was someone who looked exactly like you?
Dude, I might have a panic attack.
Yeah.
And I might start screaming.
Yep. All both natural reactions. You might, you know, just show any form of emotion, honestly.
Right.
The Sams don't.
Right. And certainly if this doppelganger was going through the same emotions that I was going through, it would get chaotic, but that's not what we get here. They both take it very passively. And I think the most reaction we get, at least initially, is Sam 1 comes up to Gertie and asks who the guy in, you know, the workout room or the rec room is. And he says, it's Sam Bell. And you're like, well, that's, yes, but that's not really explaining anything, Gertie.
Yeah.
You got us into this. Help us get out of it. What's going on here?
Yeah. And like, for a while, I thought, and I think I would have liked this direction better, I thought Sam 1 was kind of ignoring him because he thought Sam 2 was just another vision and he was just trying to learn to live with this insanity that's right. coming on. But that's not it. Sam 2's real. Sam 1's real. Mm-hmm. And they're just awkwardly sort of avoiding each other for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite unusual. And another thing that I find very unusual is that, so something obviously is wrong with Sam Wan. He's been injured in the wreck, but throughout the film, his condition is quickly and rapidly deteriorating. We see him cough up blood, cough up teeth. He's just weak.
This dude looks like a wreck by the end of the movie.
Yeah, he's an absolute wreck. But the thing that was very uneven to me was that once the appearance of Sam 2 happens, all the visions cease and all of his conditions, his issues are very physical and not mental issues. Which leads me to believe that the visions thing was just it almost seemed like the director only threw those two vision scenes of the girl in so that we could have that moment where Sam Wan in the infirmary thought that Sam 2 was a vision himself, but there was no build off of that.
Yeah, there was nothing.
And they just stop.
And it would have been so much more interesting if the issues were mental and not physical.
Right.
And it feels like another reason I thought was like, well, maybe they're physical because the director wanted a way for us to tell the Sams apart. And the much paler Sam is Sam 1.
Right.
But you just give them different colored outfits. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could have been interesting to see where the visions went as he interacts with Sam 2.
Yeah.
And if you as the audience trying to decide which POV we would have, it would have been interesting if we had, you know, stuck with the POV of Sam 2 and not seen the visions of Sam 1 and kind of had to interact with that. It just would have been really fascinating to kind of see that. Or we could have seen the other side, Sam 1 and seeing all the visions and Sam 2 and then not necessarily believing that Sam 2 was real. And it could have been fascinating. Yeah. Or at the very least, we could have had some all-out emotional arc, you know, trying to figure out why the heck there are two Sams, and we never got that either.
Imagine we get a POV from Sam 1 for most of the movie, and he sees Sam 2, and we've had all these visions to set this up. So by the time we see Sam 2, we're like, oh, this is just another vision. And there's even more visions happening. He sees this girl everywhere, and he starts talking to her like he's real, like he talks to Sam 2. And at the end, we get the twist that Sam 2 is actually real. That would have been nuts. And then we get the whole, and that would have led into the actual movie twist a little bit better, I think.
Yeah. Here's the problem I have.
Yeah.
With introducing this idea of the two Sams, is they established a situation with the two Sams, and it immediately gives the audience a certain expectation of what that interaction is going to be. And it defies, and this obviously is an intentional decision that I just disagree with, it defies the expectation by having this interaction that we've just been discussing being very passive and them accepting it as almost a natural thing, where I think it should have been more explosive and natural instinct would be the shock of there being two Sams.
Exactly. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. And I think this is where the movie started going down for me.
Yep, agreed. After the infirmary scene where Sam 2 is kind of just standing there ominously, which was a great scene, it just fell off from there for me. And man, I'll be honest, when the two Sams didn't provide any tension, it really... It makes you check out a little bit. Like, you sort of still want to know what's going on because just you're curious at that point, but you're not as invested. And on top of that, this is my other big issue. The red herring I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. There are so many ominous, eerie, creepy-esque shots of Gertie, the robot in this movie, that you immediately like, okay, Gertie's the villain. Something's going on with Gertie. He set this up. We're going to figure that out. We're going to have to take him down or disarm him or something. And it is the biggest red herring because, spoilers, by the end of the movie, Gertie is not the villain. He helps them the whole way. It's just framed and shot in a way that looks so creepy. And it was really bothersome because all of the tension that provided turned out to be false tension. And knowing that was very frustrating because the only tension that was provided was those shots. So knowing that that was false by the end of the movie was very, like I said, frustrating.
Yeah, it's interesting that you referenced the shots, and because there's one shot specifically where it's framed on Gertie and he's got this kind of blue eye in the center of his unit, which is an exact replication of the shot used. It's now famous with HAL 9000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is probably the most famous evil AI from any sci-fi film. Probably. So you get that parallel and that comparison. Now, you seem to have had, I'm not misunderstanding to say that you didn't like the fact that the twist was that Gertie was a good guy, right?
I did not like that. It didn't feel like a twist. It just felt like I'd been lied to the whole movie, honestly.
Okay. So I actually liked this because it was a subversion of expectations and a stereotype. And the stereotype in almost any sci-fi film is that because of a film like 2001 and HAL, that AI like this, certainly an AI the way Gertie set up to have these secrets that are being withheld from our main character or characters, he's set up to be the villain, the bad guy, and he's not. I thought that was very refreshing. I thought if it had been established for him to be the bad guy, it just would have felt very stereotypical and uninspired and a bit bland, in my opinion.
You know, that makes sense when you explain it, and I totally understand that. I'll be honest, it doesn't change my opinion, but I think there are definitely two sides to it.
Yeah, I just liked it because, like I said, there are so many sci-fi films out there where the AI is evil. And
you're right.
And I liked that they didn't go that route because they went another route with another sci-fi stereotype that I didn't like.
Agreed.
And it's kind of like the cheap way out of a lot of stories. And we'll get to that in a moment. So it was just neat to have Gertie not be this monster AI and helping Sam, you know, unlock the computer so he can reach the archival footage and some other things that he assists Sam with. So I thought that was kind of neat. So
we have two Sams.
We have two Sams.
They are totally indifferent toward each other for the most part.
Right.
And Sam 2, they talk a little bit, stuff happens, and then Sam 2's like, you're a clone.
Right. So I thought their initial interactions were very calm, and then we get this moment, which kind of I expected to have on the onset of their interactions, where they kind of explode at each other, kind of yelling match, claiming to be the original Sam and the other being the clone.
Yep.
And
then they fight.
Right. But what we don't get is, and I think we get some passive explanation or an offhand comment about, you know, maybe you're the clone. And so there's kind of this acknowledgement that maybe in this near future, cloning is not unrealistic or something that's out of the ordinary. But it's like a passive comment that you could easily miss, but it is.
Reaction to the concept of cloning as a whole is very minimal. So it does make you think cloning is established.
Right. Instead of having that explosiveness in regard to what are you doing here? Who the heck are you? Why is there two of me now? The explosion is them accusing each other of being the clone and being the original.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting because there are certain ways that that's kind of explained, that cloning is maybe standard. So more standard than we were led to believe from our real world experiences. But for example, when Sam 1 and Sam 2 play ping pong, and Sam 1 is very good at ping pong, having spent 3 years on the station, and Sam 2 has no experience with ping pong whatsoever, despite the fact that they are clones. And then there's another comment, Sam 1 mentions to Sam 2 that they have a daughter and shows him a photo of the daughter, which you would think that he wouldn't know, that he would know, except that he's a clone. So there are obviously things that he doesn't know, he hasn't learned, despite having background knowledge, like understanding and recognizing the model town that Sam 1 was building.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So kind of the question begins, where is that cutoff point? What does Sam 2 remember? And to what point kind of, it, at least in my mind, then led to the question, then where does Sam 1 come in?
Yeah.
Where does Sam 1 come in? Is he the original? Is he a clone? When did he become active?
Yeah. And it's worth noting again, all of this, for the most part, like we said, there's this yelling match and some fighting, but for the most part, the discussion of clones is very casual. The clone thing felt like that was supposed to be the ending twist. And sure, you've seen sci-fi movies before, you see two dudes who are the same, you're like, they're clones. But having it dropped so casually really, again, drained a lot of the tension from the movie, because you already know the answer. And
right.
Sam 2 even goes on a rampage around looking for a quote-unquote secret room where they're keeping all the clones. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course there's a secret room where they're keeping all the clones, and he can't find it right now. So you're immediately like, well, I guess that'll come up later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right there. It's kind of like, well, yeah, of course. Because SM2 makes the comment, there's no way they could have sent. And I think this was the clue comment that kind of let you in on the fact that cloning was common. He says, there's no way they could have sent me from Earth in the short amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bless you. I think
it was like a yawn.
Well, you're still blessed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anywho, and this part of the movie is really where it starts meandering for me, and I'm losing a lot of interest quickly. Yeah. We go out within, they get in the moon trucks to go like explore things, and they find these communication jammers that are blocking the live feeds to Earth so that they can't communicate, and it's all slowly revealed that obviously this is all a setup by the Lunar Industries.
Right.
Yeah.
Sam 1 goes beyond that barrier and phones home, and he gets this girl on the line, and he asks if Tess being Sam's wife, if Tess is there. And the girl says, no, she died some years ago. I'm sorry. Who is this? And then he asks the girl who she is. And it's revealed that she is his daughter, right?
At 15-year-old daughter. And
right.
Sam 1 only knows her as like a 2 or 3 year old.
Right. So this is kind of a shock. And it's all a bit confusing with, what the heck is going on here? And he asks her, how did mommy die? Yeah. which is an interesting way. You can understand his weak mental state, physical state, how he'd kind of jumped to asking that question. But you can, I think we were all in on her side. Just, it was an awkward thing to ask her.
It's also worth noting he's covering the camera, so she can't see him. So she is getting this random call from someone she can't see, who is calling her honey and sweetheart and asking how her mother died.
Yeah.
And then the key part of this for me, at least, is at the end, she's like, Daddy, someone's calling about mom. And you hear Sam's voice respond, who's calling about mom? So we know that Sam,
the original Sam.
OG Sam, is alive and back on Earth. And I did like that scene. I liked that afterward, Sam 1 kind of broke down and was like, I want to go home. And that was a powerful statement because he wants to go home to a daughter and a life and an Earth that he's never been to.
Yeah. And he wants to go home to a life that doesn't exist.
Or belong to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is sad. And that was one of the stronger, like, oh, I might actually think about that moments.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly this feeling of not only loneliness, but hopelessness.
Yeah, that's where Blade Runner kind of came into the equation with implanted memories and even the expiration date type of deal.
Blade Runner does it better.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, we're talking about Blade Runner next week, and I am so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Can't wait for that. And then 2049, the week after.
Yeah. Okay, so we get back from that, and this was my next big issue is Sam 2 sees this was just so tonally odd. Sam 2 sees the log of Sam 1's call to Earth.
Yeah.
And you see this look on his face, and he goes to talk to Gertie and says, Gertie, we need to wake up another clone. And he convinces Gertie to do so. And you can tell immediately, like, okay, Sam 2 has a plan. Because one thing we did not mention is because Combine 1 is out of commission due to the crash, Earth Lunar Industries is sending people to fix it. And if they come and find Sam 1 and Sam 2 interacting and knowing about each other, they'll both be killed immediately to avoid. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is because we have found the room now.
Oh, yeah, we found the room.
We found the room. I don't know if you noticed it, but there were six missing of all, you know, the pods with all the different clones. There's like an endless row of clones of Sam, and there are six missing pods, which is interesting because it's revealed that each clone lasts 3 years, the same length of the contract, and there were six missing clones, which aligns perfectly with the age of his daughter, 15 years plus the one that was just awakened.
Yeah, which is cool.
So I like that they keep that accurate. That was cool. So we found it. We've realized that what is happening is every 3 years, the clones are, they're all clones, and every 3 years they deteriorate and they are replaced with a new clone. And here's the real world explanation I was telling you about. And apparently the explanation that's just not mentioned at all in the film is that the station is being exposed to radiation so that every 3 years the clone dies. So you see the side effects of that, like him losing teeth and him seeing visions, are the side effects of the radiation poisoning that he's been exposed to for 3 years.
That's bogus.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Okay, whatever. That does nothing for me, honestly.
It didn't do anything for me either, but it's just I think it's a bit of a cop-out. There are a couple things that are a bit of a cop-out explanation-wise. And another one of them is that, not necessarily a cop-out, but I thought that maybe the fact that there is an original Sam would have been a bigger plot point. And I kind of would have liked that to have been explained, but it's not. I don't necessarily see where they could have fit that explanation in, but it's not explained. Mm-hmm. There is a real-world explanation that Duncan Jones has explained after the fact, and the explanation is that the original Sam did go to the moon for 3 years, and at the end of the 3 years, Lunar Industries paid him a mass amount of money to have himself cloned and have the recordings of from his wife and daughter being made, all to keep up this ruse for the other clones. so that they could just, for in perpetuity, have all these clones to man their station.
That would have been nice to have in the movie.
Yeah. And there's also this really neat thing. If you go back and look in the video, the first video call between the wife and Sam, the video message that he receives, it's kind of interesting. There are a couple things that just noticeably are just strange in that call. And the most noticeable is the fact that the video jumps in the middle of the conversation. She starts saying one thing, and then there looks like there's been some time that it's jumped to some other portion of the conversation.
Yeah.
Which is never explained, but it makes sense now in the context that it was a pre-recorded message to keep up this ruse. But there are other visual cues or clues in that video that I think are more subtle and more interesting. Like the wife, when the daughter comes on screen, the wife tells the daughter everything to say. She repeats it. She has her repeat it, which, you know, comes off as cute, as the daughter being shy and, you know, say hi to daddy. But in retrospect, it's them recording a video and her telling her what to say in the video.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat. And then also, I think halfway through the video on the right side of the screen, just slightly, you can see some portion of a man wearing a suit. And he remains there for the rest of the video.
I missed that. That's cool.
Yeah. So there are those visual cues, which plays into this ruse, and kind of it should raise questions if you're, you know, really keen-eyed at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
So that's the explanation of it. Original Sam got paid millions of dollars for all these, you know, for his DNA to be cloned. And yeah.
Sure.
So let's, if you don't mind, I'll kind of fast forward the rest of the film here.
Go for it.
Okay. So they found the room. They understand that all this clone, everything we've just explained to you guys, and Sam 2 devises this plan to send Sam 1, and this really shows his own compassion and Sam overall as a character, as an individual, not just, you know, every clone would have it, I assume. This compassion, he devises a plan to send Sam 1 home with the next shipment of Helium 3. As Elijah was mentioning, he convinces Grady to wake up a third clone. They're going to put the third clone out in the rover as the dead body for the rescue, quote unquote, rescue team to find. And then Sam 2 will play the part of the Sam that's supposed to be on the base.
Yeah.
But then Sam 1, being rapidly deteriorating health, convinces Sam 2 that both of them know that they're not killers and they couldn't just go out and kill a clone of themselves. So
yeah.
Sam 1 says, I'm dying anyway. You go to Earth. I'll go back to the pod. And we get kind of this emotional moment of, you know, him going back to the pod, saying goodbye.
I don't know about you. That was super obvious to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like as soon as he explained the plan, I'm like, well, the dying guy's going to go in the thing.
Yeah. I understand where your heart's at, but it's kind of pointless because he's clearly good as dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was super obvious. So they switch places. Sam 2 goes to Earth. Sam 1 goes back in the truck. And yep.
They reset Gertie so he doesn't remember anything.
Right. And Sam 3 stays at the base.
Yeah.
And Sam 3 is kind of a non-factor. We see him once, but he stays at the base, whatever.
Yep.
And Sam 2 goes to Earth, and we see Sam from Sam 1's POV. We see the rocket launch. And hi, Joey. How are you doing? We see Sam 2's rocket launch as, you know, Sam 1's laying there dying. The next shot we get is of the rescue team, you know, gun in hand, opening the hatch and seeing that Sam 1 is dead.
Mm-hmm.
and make a reference to let's repair the combine. As yep. the ship is heading towards Earth, we get kind of this overlay of like a news feed talking about basically talk and massive fallout and stock drops for Lunar Industries and all this kind of what you'd expect the Earth's reaction to a clone of an astronaut showing up would be.
Yeah.
End of
film. Which is neat. That's the end.
Yeah.
Everything works out. There's very little tension in the latter half of the movie.
Yeah.
Everything just kind of goes as planned.
Right. And the other stereotype I've referenced twice now that is so painfully obvious is big evil corporation doesn't care about people, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're the big bad guys.
Avatar, aliens.
Yep.
Every space movie ever.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yep.
It's like, oh, come on. You guys, at least for me, you subverted my expectation with Gertie. That was fun. But now you're playing into an even bigger stereotype with the evil corporation. It's just played out. It's at this point, I think it's a bit cheap. And it's with a film that doesn't have much else going for it, or at least it hasn't capitalized on the most intriguing parts of it. It's just boring. I would have let it slide if we had gotten a psychological thriller, or if other portions of the movie had been interesting, the other twists had been interesting and engaging. I would have let the evil corporation thing slide, but as it stands, it just felt cheap.
It did. Really, the second half of this movie is kind of just blah.
Right.
So yeah, want to do closing thoughts and give it scores?
Yeah. Absolutely. Aesthetically, I thought everything external from the station was really well done. I think it was all on like a mini stage. It took like 8 days to film all the outside shots, which is cool. Overall, I think the film took 33 days to film. But the aesthetics of the station itself were not exactly what I was hoping for. It was almost like this cartoony, plastic, sci-fi version of space. I was hoping for my expectation was kind of this colder, more industrial feel to the station, something like you get out of a much better film like Interstellar or The Martian. I kind of like that crisper, cleaner, more industrial standard, and some of the things just felt a little too make-believe in its visuals.
That's interesting, because I actually really liked the interior. I thought it was really cool. It was practical, clearly a very well-built set. I thought it fit the movie well, and I also thought the exterior shots looked pretty bad often. So, yeah.
It's interesting that we have arrived at the same conclusion on the film, but certain small details.
For different reasons.
Yeah. Not that I thought the external scenes were anything to write home about. I thought they looked, they looked better. They looked all right.
Yeah. One thing I do want to mention, the score for this movie, the musical score, was really good. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot.
Just solid.
I enjoyed it multiple times. I thought scenes were better because of it. And that's good praise for a score.
Walking on Sunshine. What a great moment.
Sam Rockwell was wonderful. Mm-hmm. He's always great.
Yeah. He's very underrated.
He is. But yeah, in the end, like, the first 30-40 minutes I thought were very good. I was super intrigued. I was invested, ready to go. And it really kind of did not come together well. There were still good scenes in the latter half, for sure. But as a whole piece of storytelling, it just kind of fell flat. All the tension, in my opinion, was fake tension. And without that fake tension, there was really no tension at all, which does not make for an interesting movie, in my opinion. So in the end, there's enough to like that I would watch this on a rainy day again, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But not enough for me to really hugely recommend it to actively seek it out. I'll give it 2.5 stars.
Okay. Yeah, and before I give my rating, there's one kind of neat piece of trivia I thought was kind of fun. Is there's a stunt where Sam hits his head, and the day they shot that scene of Sam hitting his head, the stuntman for Sam Rockwell was not on set. So the producer, Stuart Finnegan, performed the stunt himself because he realized he was the only one who could perform the stunt without getting sued.
You know, props to him.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot of fun. I'm also going to give it a 2.5 stars. I didn't think it was anything very exceptional. Nothing that stood out to me. I probably won't watch it again. Like I said, I was hoping for something that was more like a psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. I know that the remake of Solaris from, what was it, 2002, was very much this space station psychological thriller. And it had some interesting things. That's kind of the direction I thought it would go. So maybe I need to go and watch the original 1972 Solaris for that psychological thriller, but wasn't quite what I was hoping for.
Yeah, for sure. Again, not bad, but definitely not great.
Yeah. Not quite sure how it has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know Roger Ebert gave it like, what did he give it? 3.5 out of 4 stars, which I disagree with.
Yeah, he's usually on the money, but I disagree with him on that one.
Yeah, I do appreciate, just briefly, when Gene Siskel was alive, I appreciate that both of them were very candid and honest about their opinions, and they weren't just going with what everyone else was saying. I appreciate that.
Oh, for sure.
And I generally agree with both of them.
Yeah. Anyway, that's about it for Moon, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's it. Which moves us into our second segment, which is another movie quiz
for Hooray.
Elijah. Let's hope he does a little bit better than he did last time.
Oof. Don't expect much.
I don't.
Another oof.
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Question number one. And you gotta keep your own record of your strikes and misses here.
I'll do my best.
Wait, strikes and misses would be the same thing. Your yes, your corrects and incorrects.
My rights and my wrongs. My there goods go. And my bads.
Question number one. What year was the first Toy Story film released in cinemas?
1995.
You are 100% on the money.
Yes.
Numero two.
Which, by the way,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good movie. It's funny to watch it now. It looks so dated. Obviously it will, because technology has advanced so much, and it was huge for being the first fully CGI movie, but it looks really dated now.
It looks dated, especially compared to, even compared to Toy Story 2, it looks dated, but especially compared to the most recent installment of that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, here's an easy one. Who directed Titanic, Avatar, and The Terminator?
Steven Spielberg? It's James Cameron.
You are absolutely correct the second time.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a bonus one.
Oh.
Who is Duncan Jones, the director of Moon, who is his father?
Darth Vader?
Incorrect.
Dang.
David Bowie.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of all the famous Joneses I know, and it wasn't even a Jones.
Nope. It was a Bowie.
It was a Bowie. Duncan Jones directed the Warcraft movie. Fun fact.
Which three films make up what? Did he?
Yeah. Don't watch it.
Interesting.
But he did.
Maybe. Well, If our next, if in one of our future installments of That's Rough Buddy, if someone ends up on Warcraft, you might be rewatching it.
I haven't actually seen it. I just watched the cinema since.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
Number three. Which three films make up what is known as the Three Flavors Cornetto Trilogy?
Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End.
Honestly surprised you knew that.
Hot Fuzz is hilarious.
I've not seen it.
It's great. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
I like it. Number four. Who directed Parasite? this list is like layups.
It is. I can't. I don't want to mispronounce his name. I don't want to butcher this.
I know. You want me to say it? I know you know it.
Yeah.
Bong Joon-ho.
That's what, yeah. I knew Bong was in there.
Number five. Which Oscar-winning actress is the voice of Helen Parr in The Incredibles?
Helen Hunt?
Wrong. Holly Hunter.
Oh, it's the other HH. Duh. I had the HHs backward. Why don't you Google, like, really hard movie quiz?
Really hard movie quiz. Fine. You don't like my questions?
Fine. Give me the next one. What's the next one?
Name the 2015 spinoff to the Rocky series starring Michael B. Jordan in the role of Creed. No, the role of Creed part wasn't. It just was very obvious.
Creed. It's a great movie.
Super hard movie quiz because Elijah didn't like my.
You didn't make up those questions, did you?
I spent 15 hours. No. Okay.
That one was just easy.
You're absolutely right, Chief. They were easy. But I was trying to help you out because last time you really suffered, man.
Well, I would rather
suffer
and be challenged. Yeah, exactly.
All right, are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll probably get none of these right now.
What was the first operation called in the James Bond movie For Your Eyes Only? By the way, Sean Connery passed away yesterday.
Yes, he did. Very sad. Operation Save the World.
The correct answer was Operation Undertow.
Yes. Definitely knew that.
In what movie did Johnny Depp play Gene Watson?
Secret Window.
Nick of Time.
I named the first Johnny Depp movie I could think of where I didn't know the character's name.
In the Birds being the film's title.
Yeah,
the Hitchcock. Yes. Have you seen it, by the way?
I've not.
Oh, it's good. In The Birds, what California town do the birds attack?
San Francisco.
Bodega Bay.
Yes, the other town in California.
What is the name of the magical realm bordering the human kingdom in the 2014 film Maleficent?
People, they assume I've seen Maleficent. Topsy Turvy Town.
I don't appreciate the lack of preparedness you have come here today with.
I'm sorry I didn't research James Bond
operations. Elijah.
I'm sorry I didn't research James Bond operations and Maleficent's locations.
Yeah. Okay. Here's an easy one. In which city does Hugo take place?
Hugo? Oh, geez. I saw that when I was like 12.
I never saw it, but I still know which city it took place in.
Do you?
Not just because I saw the answer. I knew it before.
Is it Paris?
You are correct.
Yeah. I remember French being in that movie.
Mm. In the 2003 film, The Return of the King, which actor plays Aragorn?
Aragorn? Like Strider Aragorn?
Yeah.
Viggo Mortensen.
There we go. I love that you had to ask Strider.
Well, I think Aragorn and Aragon, you know, that's a movie too. It's a bad movie, but it's a movie.
Back to the Future. What is the name of the mall where the time traveling begins?
I do not know. Kmart.
Twin Pines Mall.
I saw that movie once when I was like 8.
Here's a fun trivia fact. In he time travels from the Twin Pines parking lot, goes back to 1955, and as he's crashing the DeLorean, he crashes into a pine tree, leaving one pine tree. So when he goes back to the future, right, when he returns to 1985, back to the mall, it's called something like Lone Pine Mall. It's kind of funny.
That's awesome.
All right. Let's see. I want to give you, okay. What year was Harry completing at Hogwarts in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban?
His third year.
There we go.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
Your pity is appreciated.
In The Lion King, what is the name of Simba's mother? No, it is not Samba.
It's not Nala. Is it Nala? Nala. Or is that Simba's girlfriend, Lion?
Mm. The answer was Sarabi. Sarabi.
I would not have got that. Sounds like a chili pepper.
That's because it sounds like
wasabi.
Wasabi, which is not a chili pepper. Wasabi is not.
I don't know, man.
You're going to need a bigger boat was a line made
Jaws.
Famous. Okay. Yeah, there we go.
I knew that one.
We're all over the place with the
Jaws is fantastic.
Difficulties.
It is. This is a very inconsistent, super hard movie quiz.
Stand By Me takes place around what holiday?
Christmas.
No. Have you ever seen Stand By Me?
No.
Wait, you've never seen Stand By Me?
Sounds like a rom-com I wouldn't be interested in.
No, it stars River Phoenix, a young Will Wheaton, Corey Feldman. It's based off a Stephen King novel, short story. You've never seen Stand By Me?
No. I don't typically love Stephen King adaptations. Shawshank's the only great one.
Kiefer Sutherland.
I haven't seen Green Mile, though. So that one's probably great, too.
Green Mile wasn't very good.
Whoa, that's probably going to ruffle some feathers.
Nah, it was... The fact that you've not even heard of Stand By Me is shocking.
I've heard of it. I've heard the name before.
You thought it was a rom-com, dude.
I mean, if you heard a movie was called Stand By Me, you would think it's some sort of rom-com.
I mean, Stand By Me is like one of the best coming-of-age films, one of the best... I mean, it's one of my top 50 favorite films, and I hate Stephen King, so...
Who do you hate more, Stephen King or Quentin Tarantino?
I like Shawshank and I like Stand By Me, so it's got to be QT.
Fair enough.
And the holiday was Labor Day. We seriously have to watch Stand By Me for this. I'm just disappointed in you now, Elijah.
It happens often.
Yeah. Who directed the 1986 movie Aliens?
Didn't we have this question on the other super
we had the question who directed Avatar, Titanic, and Terminator.
Oh, so we're getting the other one in there.
Yeah.
James Cameron.
You're correct.
Who directed Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5?
James Cameron. Who played Oracle in The Matrix?
Oh, man. I don't actually know her name, and that's sad. I know I can imagine, I can picture her character. I just don't know her name.
You know what's sad is between the filming of the first one and the second one, she died.
So I did know that. Yeah, that was sad. She was great in the first one.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Gloria Foster.
Gloria Foster. Thank you, Gloria Foster, for being the Oracle and teaching us about spoons.
Exactly. In Raiders of the Lost Ark, Which poison food does Indy nearly eat?
A date.
You're correct.
That what movie's awesome.
It is a good. It is a good movie. What animated film released by Walt Disney lost millions at the box office? Millions.
There's only one.
Apparently, it's an animated film. It lost millions. So,
Treasure Planet, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That was the first one where they did a lot of heavy digital animation, and it was kind of a flop. So,
What was Johnny Depp's first major movie role?
Oh gosh, and
it's not the last thing you said. You had a Johnny Depp was question.
Was it Gilbert Grape?
No, it wasn't. What's Eating Gilbert Grape? It was Nightmare on Elm Street.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know he was in that.
Well, neither did I.
Cool.
Who portrayed Bruce Wayne in the movie Batman Begins?
Was that one George Clooney or Val Kilmer?
You're going to have to guess.
Okay. Christian Bale.
Yeah. I was a little concerned there for a second. What movie is about the first American cargo ship to be hijacked in 200 years? Do I need to reread that? I kind of read it oddly.
Is it Captain Phillips?
You're correct.
Okay. It took me a second to process it, but I got there.
Who sang the theme for Skyfall?
Adele.
That's right.
And that song is great. Good job. That song is great.
She did a freaking good job. That's what she did.
She did. She did a freaking good job.
It was great. She needs to make another album.
She's working on it.
She needs to get there. Come on.
She does. We're going to be like 45 by the time we get there.
Please don't tell me that.
It'll be called 45.
Okay. This is a really tricky one, so.
Okay, I'm ready.
Answer smartly. What type of film is Kung Fu Panda 2?
Well, I feel like there are two answers I could give, maybe even three.
You can only give one.
It's an animated movie.
You're correct.
Okay. I could also go with Kung Fu or comedy.
That was a bad question.
That was a really dumb question.
Who wrote that?
I don't know.
Before playing Edward Cullen in 2008's Twilight Zone, Robert Pattinson had which Harry Potter role?
Did you just
say? So you thought it was a Twilight. You thought it. I just said Twilight Zone, didn't I?
You said Twilight Zone.
I just refuse to acknowledge Twilight exists.
So does Joey.
Yeah, Joey hates it.
That would be Cedric Diggory.
You're correct. But of course you're correct.
Yeah, that one I know pretty well.
Which film directed by Brian Levant had Philip Bolden in the cast?
We're back to super hard, I guess. I don't know. The Devil Wears Prada. That's my guess.
Is that a Brian Levant film?
I don't know.
Are we there yet?
I did not know that.
All right.
What's next?
What is the middle name of Robert De Niro's character in Little Fockers?
George.
I'll give you a hint. It's the same middle name as James Kirk.
Tiberius?
Yeah.
I did not expect that.
Yeah. Kind of fun, huh?
Interesting. Okay, let's do a couple more here.
Okay. In the movie The Bourne Ultimatum, what has Jason Bourne been trained to be?
An assassin.
The answer is a killer, but I'll give it to you.
What?
A killer. Okay, genius.
Also, I'm pretty sure they specifically say assassin in the movie. I can't guarantee it, but I'm pretty sure they do.
Where was the 2007 movie Are We Done Yet filmed?
I remember watching trailers for that movie on TV.
Really?
Like, it's one of those memories that you don't remember having until it's prompted like this. Is that, I feel like it might have been an Adam Sandler movie.
It could have been, but the question was, where was it filmed?
Miami.
British Columbia.
That was very wrong.
Yeah, it was. Which 1980 movie is about an emotionally obsessed scientist who experiments on himself?
I feel like I should know this one. Should I know this one?
Maybe.
You're not helpful.
This quiz is not helpful.
You're not wrong. I mean, I don't know that one. I can't think of it, but I will say a movie where that does happen, but it's not from the 80s. The Amazing Spider-Man.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's not it.
That does happen, though.
Altered States.
I didn't know that. Give me the most obscure, difficult question you see.
Sure. This is an interesting one. Who led the Kansas City Chiefs in rushing in Super Bowl IV? How is this on a movie quiz?
That's... was it Dave Osborne?
No, it was Mike Garrett.
Interesting. Mike Garrett. Two first names.
Yeah, Mike and Garrett. Okay.
Why is that on a movie quiz?
No clue. Okay. Do you want one more?
Give me three more.
Three more. Okay. Alicia Silverstone made her debut in which film?
No idea.
What? You're not a Alicia Silverspoon aficionado?
Silverspoon. Did you just say Silverspoon?
We're all over the place in this segment. It's fine. It's just what's like this quiz.
Yeah.
Crush.
Crush.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
What's next?
Hold, please.
Holding.
What is Gary Oldman's character's code name in the 2011 spy drama Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy?
Tin Man.
Beggar Man.
I was 50% correct.
Sure.
That was 50% of the name. Man is half of it.
Man. Okay.
Last one.
I want to make it a good one. I want to make it a good one.
Like one I could maybe sort of answer.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. In the Temple of Doom, where does Willie's dress in which Indy puts two holes come from?
In which he puts two holes?
Yeah. It's not a way of wording it, but I guess that's what happens. And she must say, oh, this dress is from?
Oh, I don't remember. It's from Pakistan.
Yeah, so her dress that she's upset about him putting two holes in is from Pakistan. That makes
definitely
sense.
Definitely.
The correct answer was Perry.
Perry. Hey, that's the second answer that's been Paris.
That's correct.
Well, that was a movie quiz.
I'm not sure if you did better or worse than last time. I think the quiz was worse than last time.
The quiz was definitely worse, but I did like some of the easy ones I got easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting.
It was.
First, I gave it to you too easy. Then I gave it to you too.
Yeah, we needed to find the middle ground.
Yes. Hard, but relevant.
Exactly. So next week, we're doing Blade Runner.
We are. That'll be pretty exciting. It's one that we've wanted to do for a long time.
Very long time. Back. Yeah. What's our second segment?
I'll keep you in suspense.
Oh, exciting.
Well, I figure that out.
Excellent. You want to wrap us up?
Yeah, I think I'll wrap us up. Guys, thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed our analysis of Moon and our subsequent failure at a movie quiz for Elijah.
Next and time
we watch movies,
you'll be failing the quiz.
Or I'll be succeeding the quiz. I have been Forrest. He has been Elijah. This has been We Watch Movies. And until next... Oh, wait. And you guys have been beautiful. Until next time, stay beautiful.
See ya.